Reading from The Pirates by George MacDonald Fraser, Chapter the 16th.
"I don't bleedin' believe it," gasped Vladimir McIntosh Grunbaum in stricken incredulity. "It must have been some other geezer."
He was at breakfast on his private veranda of the Roatan Athenaeum Club. Or rather, he wasn't, for the item in the broadsheet before him had caused him to leave untasted his dish of squid kidneys on breadfruit toast, crisp with the fragrance of your favorite forecastle, and take a quick restoring draught from the pannikin of grog and orange at his elbow. He had arrived the previous night at this wide-open, lawless settlement which served as a great neutral clearing-house for the Caribbean, where honest traders rubbed shoulders with the scum of the seas, where plunder was exchanged, contraband openly sold, plots hatched, government spies lurked, waterfront hells and merchant banks stood wantonly open day and night, and nothing was too wild or wicked. Even tour parties were accepted, and before he had properly rubbed the sleep from his biggy little eyes or got over his galleon lag, the paragraph on the classified page of the Carib curse had smitten him like a falling belaying pin. He goggled at it again. "For sale, as new, one King's Captain, young, well-built, double-first, house-trained, answers to name of Ben. 1,000 doubloons, O-N-O. Write for brochure or apply in person to Souza's Barracoon, Scupper Street. Hurry, hurry while stocks last."
"It can't be him," muttered Vladimir. "Can it? What, Longman Avery, pride of the senior service, letting hisself get put up for grabs in the slavery column? Never! He may be an officer and gent, but he ain't that simple. Is he? Oh, Lord!"
His little yellow jowls trembled in doubt, and 5 minutes later he was scooting along the colorful wharves, heedless of the raffish crowds of human flotsam who jostled him, accosted him, picked his pocket, offered to take his likeness, and plied him with postcards and Roatan rock in 5 yummy flavors: Tabasco, cinnamon, sandalwood, rico powder, and bilge. In Scupper Street he obtained entry to the slave barracoon by flashing the complimentary voucher which the Athenaeum gave to all its guests, and followed the shuffling turnkey through the fetid atmosphere of the foul underground pens marked sale goods, where human cattle of every hue were packed in suffocating squalor. In the last chamber of all, marked "Special Offer, Not to be Repeated," he paused in horror, for there, alone and chained by massy links to the floor, was the object of his quest, immaculately ragged, impeccably unkempt, radiating clean-cut fortitude through his 5-day growth. Captain Avery rose with clanking courtesy to greet his visitor. His fine gray eyes widened with astonishment as the turnkey withdrew. "My agent," he cried. "Why, whence come ye?"
"Oh, unhappy sight!" exclaimed Vladimir. "What the empurple hell are you doing here?"
"Preparing to escape," replied Avery in a cool whisper. "No small employee, that sundry nights agone I was trepanned from the temple of Kohakal Guzlan by dastard knave who besought me for a light. Aye, though he had matches and to spare, I warrant. And borne hither as probationary slave, the rotters," he went on grimly, "had me trust secure, else had I escaped. Yet all's for the best, for this night, when I crash hence, I shall take with me the many hundred sorry captives who lie in this vile barracoon, and if there happens to be a Spanish fleet attacking the town at the time, I and my fellows will mount bloody counter-assault, o'erwhelming the dons and earning the gratitude of the authorities, who will gladly confirm our freedom. That, according to what you told me, is the classic way of escaping from slavery, is it not?"
"Did I say that?" quavered Vladimir, bewildered. But supposing there ain't a Spanish fleet attacking tonight? I mean, you can't tell this time of year.
Then I'll just take over the settlement by force, shrugged Avery, and with my liberated band make haste to Cohockle Guzlin, there to rescue my betrothed, the peerless Lady Vanity, who lies captive o' heathen savages. You wouldn't have heard about that, though.
Hold on a minute.
Vladimir sank weakly onto a convenient pile of rusty shackles and mopped his brow.
I'm still not abreast. Why the hell,
he demanded, clinging to essentials,
aren't you out there mollicating the Coast Brotherhood? How come you've let yourself be took by slavers? I mean, it's not good enough, Cap'n. You and me got a contract, and it don't say a damn thing about your going into domestic service.
How, sirrah? Our hero's eyes knit, and his brows glinted sternly. You presume to question. If fortune of war deserts me for the nonce, 'tis no concern of thine. Besides, I'll be off and running as soon as I've broke me this chain, inspired the slaves to revolt, laid out the turnkey, and captured the local armory. But to quiet thy importunities and satisfy thee, I have not been idle, he added carelessly. Cop hold of these. And from the ragged sash at his gracefully disordered waist, he drew forth two Madagascar crosses, one enclosing a flashing diamond, and the other a black pearl, and tossed them to the goggling Vladimir. Now shut up a minute while I haul this ringbolt out of the floor. But Vladimir was already speechless as he stared bug-eyed at the glittering trophies. 5 out of 6! Of course, Avery didn't know that Vladimir already had the crosses of Happy Dan, Firebeard, and Akbar, and the oily twister had no intention of telling him. Keep the lad on his toes. So while Avery did a few yoga exercises and then began to heave amain to break his fetters, the agent gnawed his lip in silence and then gave a deprecatory sniff.
Well, that's 2 of 'em, I suppose. Just 2 out of 6, Cap'n. We haven't been setting the 7 seas on fire exactly, have we? Gotta do better than that, I think. And which of the bloody villains did you get these off of?
Sheba, the she-wolf, gasped Avery, heaving until his magnificent biceps creaked.
And Black Bilbo, ha!
He paused, sighing. Nay, I see I shall have to use both hands. Stand back, fellow, lest ye come to harm when I pull the floor up. He laid hold again, but Libertatia's favorite pawnbroker paid no heed. He was calculating that the only cross now missing was the one held by Calico Jack Rackham, and he was confident that he knew exactly where it was. It was notorious that the prudent Calico, who believed in post office savings and Christmas clubs, forwarded all his loot to his voluptuous mistress and former comrade-in-arms, the celebrated Anne Bonny, who kept it safe on their shark-surrounded island retreat, not an hour's sail from Roatan. But how to obtain the cross from the formidable termagant, guarded as she was, and herself a notable sword and pistol dame?
"Oh, blow!"
exclaimed Avery, who had been hauling prodigiously to an accompaniment of crackling concrete and clouds of dust. He had dragged up not only the ring-bolt, but an enormous boulder in which it was embedded. "I can't cart this lot round after me. I'll have to pound it to bits. Talk about slavery!" And of a sudden he checked and wheeled on Vladimir, his rags aflap with inspiration. "But of course, what need to labor towards escape now that thou'rt on hand, good Mackintosh Grunbaum? Oh, by the way, your name is too much of a mouthful. I think I'll call you Mac, unless you prefer Grun. No matter." He laid a hand on the shyster's grubby shoulder. "As I was saying, now that thou hast arrived so timely, thou canst buy me from these slave traders, for I doubt not you're well lined with funds. Why on earth didn't I think of it earlier?"
"Was that?"
Vladimir started from his reverie and blinked up at the eagerly smiling captain.
buyer, did you say? From the slavers?" His eyes owled in alarm. "Oh, Captain, I couldn't do that. What, me? Dabble in slave trade? No, my conscience wouldn't let me. It's immoral. Oh, that'd never do."
Avery slapped his forehead in vexation. "To be sure, I never thought. Nay, forgive me, good groon. I blush for my own lack of scruple. Thou art an honest fellow." "Ah, well," he sighed, "I'll just have to bash my way out after all." And he began karate chopping at the boulder, shouting, "Hi!" Vladimir winced.
"Hold on a sec, Captain," he pleaded, for Avery's proposal had
sown a seed in his knavish mind, and he wanted time to think.
"I couldn't buy you, we agree, but I might be able to work out something. I got contacts, see? We don't want you starting a slave revolt unnecessary, do we? Or straining yourself making an escape. Look, give me a couple of hours, and I'll see what I can do."
"You have a scheme, good Fink?" cried Avery, a quiver.
"In the bud," mused Vladimir, "in the bud. Listen, you hang on here, and whatever happens, you go along nice and peaceful, all right? Do exactly what you're told, however unlikely. Await directions, and trust me, 'cause I think," he tapped his bulbous hooter, "I see daylight."
"Bravo, Groon! Nay, 90% is little enough, I vow," said Avery warmly. "Never fear, I'll abide thy stratagem, whate'er it may be, and in the meantime, do you think you could smuggle me in a razor, aftershave, and a complete change of kit? 42 chest, 30 waist, ruffled shirt, and plain buckles?"
"Exactly what I was about to suggest," said Vladimir unctuously. "Leave it to your uncle. Turnkey?"
The jailer thrust in his villainous head and swore at the sight of the ruined floor.
"You bloody vandal," he cried. "Next thing you'll be on the roof, I suppose, throwing down slates. Cripes, it's worse than having the IRA on your hands."
Vladimir waved him aside, and a few minutes later was closeted with D'Souza the slaver, a hook-nosed horror with a great whip coiled on his desk, and B.O.
"You want to buy the Englishman?" he croaked. "You crazy? He's a nut. Too much a class. So needs him. It's like a you try to sell a Gobelin tapestry in South Wales. I only took the bum for the prestige advertising."
He glowered at Vladimir.
"Go ahead, rob me. Laugh at my 1,000 doubloons and offer me 600. "Done," said Vladimir. "But I don't want him for myself, see? He's a gift, like, for a lady of my acquaintance. Nah, this is strictly twixt you and me, see? I want him dolled up real nice and took across to Shark Island with this presentation card round his neck."
And he scribbled on one of D'Souza's labels and passed it across. The slave trader gave a ghastly leer and chuckled.
"You wish him to be gift-wrapped, eh? I like your style, Fatso. And the recipient?" "He's to be delivered to Mistress Anne Bonny from an anonymous admirer. And mark," added Vladimir, "not a word to the boy himself. I want it to be a surprise to him, too."
He smirked and winked, and D'Souza bellowed with lewd laughter.
"Surprise, Prabaco! She will devour him," he roared. "And Calico Jack is away in the Tortuga. When he come home, he will see a new slave on Shark Island, but it will be an old trembling man with grey hair. Know what I mean?" "I had heard she was partial," murmured Vladimir. "But, mum!"
So now we see Captain Avery that same evening, clad in a clean, ruffled shirt with crimson sash and dark breeches, his hair newly dressed, his chin shaved, his person areek with eau de portobello. Morgan took Panama with 500 men, and the governor's lady with just a dab of eau de pie. Only 5 more doors, the keg, or in the handy bucket size. he is being rowed across the strait to mysterious Shark Island, reflecting that if this is how Vladimir organizes escapes, he is indeed an agent beyond price. He breathes the scented night air, drowsing to the regular oar beats of the silent rowers, nor marks the small boat that dogs their wake a cable's length behind. At the Shark Island landing stage, he is delivered into the care of a huge blackamoor in scarlet livery, who wordlessly beckons him to follow to the great white house, bright with lights, which nestles among dark groves of trees. Wondering, but with every confidence in his agent's arrangements, Avery follows, and beyond sight of the landing stage, the small boat creeps in among the mangroves, and a small, fat figure scuttles ashore and is lost in the undergrowth. Captain Avery now found himself bidden to wait in the spacious hall of a mansion of notable luxury. Silver candle branches were reflected in the polished floor. Furniture of Master Gibbons abounded, as did priceless rugs and flying ducks, and on the walls among the Van Dykes and Arthur Rackhams, work that one out sometime, were group paintings of what looked like crews and their commanders, sitting with folded arms and loot piled before them, the frames labeled Caracas 67 or Nombre de Dios 71 and the like. On the spinet stood a portrait of a grinning, evil-featured foreigner in a headscarf inscribed, "Ah, mon ami Jack, from his best pal at Maracaibo, now L'Illinois," and signed with a ragged X. Avery would have examined it, but just then he caught sight of himself in a mirror and realized that his boat cloak was decorated at the nape with a huge pink tinsel bow from which hung a card. He glanced down to examine it. It bore the slogan, "Don't be a loser, shop with D'Souza," and the written message, "A present for a good girl. Have fun." The captain frowned. It must be some code used by those whom Vladimir had employed to assist his escape, and at that moment, from the room into which the black footman had vanished to announce Avery's arrival, was heard a rich, honeyed contralto, laden with boredom and sex appeal. "A personal delivery at this hour?" it drawled, sounding like a wanton Lady Bracknell. "Foolish Onslow, to some tedious little salesman's ploy. One is fatigued and does not wish to know. From D'Souza's and gift-wrapped? Nay, not another free sample. Hi-ho, bring it in, then." Curious conversation, thought Avery, as the footman emerged and beckoned him, rather peremptorily, it seemed, to the captain, but he strode into the room and found himself bowing before a red-haired Juno, lusciously overweight in a plunging silk gown, who was reclining on a sofa, eating marshmallows, and moodily studying a calorie chart. You may have seen the picture in Johnson's History, which shows Anne Bonny as a strapping virago in deplorable trousers and inadequate blouse, armed with cutlass, battle-axe, and pistols, one of which she is discharging at some unfortunate off-camera. But that was ages ago, when she'd been a wild young pirate groupie, racketing around with Calico Jack, scuttling ships, slitting throats, ravishing innocent youths, and styling herself Ms. Nowadays, the bra-burning buccaneerette had become an exquisitely languid young matron who ate far too much creamy food, dieted self-indulgently, read popular novels in bed, crammed herself into fashionable creations, and couldn't have roused herself to scuttle or slit a paper bag, although she remained passionately addicted to young men, innocent or not, because, she maintained, it took her mind off slimming. The sudden advent of Avery, bowing his stalwart 6'2" in sash and ruffles, caused marshmallow and calorie chart alike to slip limply from her fingers. She swallowed convulsively, and her sleepy green eyes and generous mouth parted in awed astonishment, slowly widening into a smile which, in a public place, would have led to her apprehension by the vice squad. Avery, poor simp, supposing her an accomplice of Vladimir's, took it for a polite welcome, and when she beckoned him closer, he remembered his agent's injunction to do whatever he was told, and obeyed. Mistress Bonnie, roused from her habitual ennui by this vision of masculine perfection, read the message on the gift card and couldn't believe her luck. Why, it was just what she'd always wanted. "God's mercy, darling," she murmured breathlessly. "And one really means God's mercy. Wherever did they find you?"
"Lately, madam, in D'Souza's barracoon."
"But who sent thee? The dear, thoughtful people?"
Slightly puzzled, Avery replied guardedly. "One who is known to you, I think, ma'am."
"Well," purred the lady, "whoever he is, this certainly beats the hell out of Milk Tray." She took his hand caressingly. "And your name, darling?"
Extraordinary woman, thought Avery, and hedged again. "Shall we say only that I am your most humble obedient servant, ma'am?"
"Well, of course you are, silly boy." Mistress Anne uncoiled her plump stateliness from the sofa and stood hand on hip, smiling hungrily. "And how obedient you're going to be, baby. Humble? Who cares?" And she ran a playful finger down the opening of his shirt ruffles, causing Avery to jump and go, "Yeep!"
"Madam," he was scandalized, "that's me in there."
"Not madam, darling, mistress. So hold still, rot thee, when she deigns to tickle, and be suitably grateful, understand?"
"Why, mistress, then, if you like."
Another women's lib freak, evidently.
"Indeed, I'll be deeply grateful if you will but give me directions."
"Commands, darling."
"Right, fine. Commands. I'm easy, so we lose no more time in idle crosstalk, for I am all hot impatience to be doing. So, for Pete's sake, give your footman the gate, and—"
"What, saucy?" she stared, laughed sharply, and slapped him smartly on the cheek. "Mama gives the orders, darling, remember." Then, to complete his confusion, she slid soft hands about his neck and pouted teasingly. "Nay, look never adown, pretty fool, for I forgive thee, since 'tis a sweet impatience, and I'm all for it. Drift, Onslow," she added over her shoulder to the footman, who was sulkily reflecting that these honky studs had all the luck. "Oh, and Onslow, open an account with D'Souza's for servicing and maintenance, unless," she drawled at Avery, "you're under guarantee." Plainly, she was off her trolley, unless this was more of their confounded code.
"My agent is trustworthy," he hazarded,
and Mistress Anne chuckled wickedly. "We'll soon see about that," was her cryptic comment. And as Onslow withdrew, she seized the captain in a hammerlock and clamped her mouth on his with volcanic enthusiasm. He heaved manfully, but it was like resisting a rogue barrage balloon, and a strong, experienced one at that. Through his mind flashed a memory of being caught up in a wet mainsail during a hurricane, when he had saved himself by lying still and not panicking. He tried it now as they reeled about, glued together, until she pinned him on the sofa and broke the clinch, breathless, but with a steely glint in her green eyes. "Darling," she panted, "less humility and considerably more of that hot impatience you were advertising, or mistress is going to be rather displeased."
"But, madam, I mean mistress—"
"Damn your gorgeous hide, darling, don't interrupt. Now let's try again, shall we? And this time, obedient servant, one expects your best shot, or else. So—"
"Hold it,"
Avery used his quarter-deck voice, and she quivered in sheer surprise. He struggled up.
"Look, what gives? I am told at the barracoon, by one that I trust, that for my salvation I must do as I'm bid, ask no questions, and all will be well. So I look for directions, but am told nothing. I don't understand what you say, even less what you do, and frankly it's pretty bizarre if you ask me, or what happens next. Madam," he cried fervently, "or mistress, what am I meant to do?"
Anne Bonny's lips were parted in crimson bewilderment, her eyes pools of incredulous creme de menthe. She blinked.
"You mean, God help us, you have never," she gestured uncertainly with a white hand, "never had it away before?"
Had it away? Escaped from slavery, perhaps. Every trade had its cant, he knew. Why, never, he assured her.
But he protested all steamy impatience.
Well, dash it, who wouldn't? Do you think I'd like being bottled up?
And you look to mistress for instruction?
Lady, believe me, 'tis what I yearn for.
Anne Bonny's lashes fluttered, and she fetched a slow, ecstatic sigh that shook the sofa. She patted her glossy red tresses, and a strange excitement kindled in her wanton eyes.
"Oh, brother," she murmured huskily,
"one had dreamed this since maidenhood, whenever that was.
Talk about bonuses!"
She felt delicious goose pimples at the prospect. This answer to Messalina's prayer, panting eagerly and innocent.
And she owned him, and Calico Jack wouldn't be back from Tortuga for ages. "Thou sweet, gorgeous ignorance," she sighed, and fondly pinched his cheek. "Oh, and mistress was cross with thee. Nay, but we shall make all right, and school thee to our heart's content.
Prithee, let's go."
"Ah, but softly, for 'tis not so simple," she gurgled voluptuously and flexed her imagination. "First, sit closer. Closer, darling. One isn't going to bite you. Yet. Now, this hand about me, and other so. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. Just do exactly as I do."
Bewildering, but it gave our bemused hero something to cling to in more ways than one. Obey orders, Vladimir had said, and it was the code by which Avery lived. Broadsides or lady wrestlers, you did your duty, however improbable, and trusted authority. So when Mistress Bonny's sweet lips closed on his, he kissed her back for all he was worth, which wasn't negligible, for he was vanity-trained, and accidental embraces with Sheba and Mellifluous hadn't blunted his technique, and, oddly enough, he found it rather pleasant, nay, positively enjoyable. Not like vanity exactly, and subtly different from Sheba and Mellifluous. Interesting, that. Of course, this lady was slightly older, with more, what was the word? Proportion? Generosity? What did that cad Blood called it? Barumph! Anyway, she was undoubtedly attractive, and most appreciative. Tasted delicious, too, like a hungry mango, if one could imagine such a thing, and you felt you could go on eating it all day, or all night, or whatever time it was. Oh, pity, she'd stopped, and was swaying with a slightly glazed expression, holding tightly for support.
"Struth!" gasped Mistress Bonny reverently. "Ah, wow! Thou a novice? Oh, darling, thou'rt right, so right! We waste time, indeed."
She lunged pneumatically against him. "Reach up behind and undo my top button. Quickly, oaf!"
But, madam, to what end?"
"Darling, don't tease. Mistress doesn't like it." "To what end but to get the dress off, booby? Takes a shoehorn to get into the damn thing. Oh, come on. Got it? Clever minion."
He started back, fearing overspill as she rose abruptly, but to his relief she swayed tempestuously away to her boudoir door, pausing there to smolder at him. "Mistress is going to slip into something loose, darling," she drawled throbbingly. "Leave your things in yonder closet, and when mistress whistles," she pushed her hair up and munched ardently in his direction, "break all records, is that clear?" She vanished into the boudoir. He was nonplussed. Ah, she was going to change, plainly, so that she could conduct him to safety. And she was right. If stealth was required, he'd be better without this ridiculous cloak. He entered the closet, a small, dim chamber, off the other side of the drawing-room, and was casting the cloak aside when there came an urgent scrabbling at the shutter. He jerked it open, and the sweating face of Mackintosh Grunbaum peered furtively in.
"That you, Cap'n? Thank God! I've been creepin' about everywhere."
"About time," snapped Avery. I have been driven nigh hairless by thy female accomplice. Couldn't you have found someone in their right mind? The woman's Coco.
She ain't.
Don't tell me. You haven't had to go 3 falls with her. Has she no sense of haste?
She ain't my accomplice, I mean. Vladimir struggled over the sill. Look, there's been a bit of balls up, he lied earnestly. Afore I could make arrangements to have you enlarged, she bought you. As a slave, I mean. You being for sale and all. Well, I couldn't foresee that, could I?
Bought me? Avery was staggered. Why, a God's name?
I dunno. Out of vacancy, probably. But, Cap'n, 'tis prodigious stroke of fortune. Don't you know who she is?
Womanhood's answer to Black Quango, the way she behaves. Avery was bitter. Gad, she's got a cheek, buying a chap she doesn't even know. Well, she can forget it. We'll off smartly.
Hold on, Cap'n, you don't cotton. She's Anne Bonny, former pirate wench and paramour to Calico Jack Rackham, don't you see? This is his place, and it's a stone ginger cert his Madagascar cross is in the house this minute. We're in luck, Cap'n.
You mean I might employ the occasion to recover it?
All in one, smirked Vladimir. Funny old world, isn't it?
Avery stroked shaven chin and got lipstick all over his fingers. A rare opportunity, truly. But how to find it?
Easy. Doth not she use it to deck her plump and pleasing bosom?
No, Avery gulped heavily. I can vouch for that.
Well, then, in her boudoir, among her fripperies, as a favourite and pampered slave, you'd have lots of chances.
Who says I'm her favourite and pampered slave? Hardly met the woman.
Come, come, Cap'n, leered Vladimir. You'll get to know her.
Bah! And how long would that take?
In the biblical sense, about 4 minutes, said cynical Vladimir. That ain't raspberry jam on your clock, Cap'n. She's been trying to have her lecherous way with you already, hasn't she?
What? The scales fell from Avery's eyes, clanging through his brain. Trying to... You mean that in there, just now, she was giving rein to... He quivered with outrage. Mucky passion?
I might have known you did biology at school, nodded Vladimir, and at that moment a soft, sex-laden whistle ululated through the gloom. Avery leaped like a stung whippet.
That's her, he cried, grammar forgotten, and Vladimir beamed and clapped him on the shoulder.
Go in and win, my boy, he chuckled, and go through a jewel case afterwards.
Not a chance. Avery's voice grated like a grounded tanker. Why, thou smut, hast no shame, and I affianced to Lady Vanity. Even if I wasn't, I certainly wouldn't. He blushed furiously. Misbehave with this awful woman? Far too domineering, and red hair's a sign of bad temper. No, we must get the cross, but that's right out. Forget it. Think of something else.
Vladimir hopped in agitation. Be reasonable, Cap'n. God, when I think of the fellows who'd give up drink for the chance. Listen, she's whistling again.
She can whistle till her toenails rattle, said Avery coldly. The very idea.
But she'll have her blacks looking for you in a minute. We'll be nabbed, and she'll do you over just the same. Vladimir was almost in tears. Do it the easy way, Cap'n, for me.
And seeing Avery adamant, the little shyster fell to raging, and then, hearing a third whistle, distinctly shrill, groaned and dug into his pocket.
All right, then, you win. Here, grab this. I brought it along just in case.
He thrust a small vial at Avery.
Take it. 'Tis butyl chloride, better known as Master Finn. Used to Shanghai silly sailormen and Zonk security guards. Slip that in her ribena, and she'll drop like a factory chimney. Come on, cop old, find an excuse to ply her with drink. I'll be neath the window, and when she's flaked out, we'll turn the place over.
Avery hesitated. 'Twill not harm her, his eyes gimleted, or arouse her dark passions.
"'Don't be soft. She needs a rousing like I need an honest accountant.'
Vladimir scrambled out of the window, and Avery hesitated no longer. He shot into the drawing-room, slurped wine into a glass, added the knockout drops, and paused. How to make her drink it, raging with impatience as she was? A whistle like a factory hooter shrieked from the boudoir. He pounced on the calorie chart and swanned in like a man deep in thought.
"Darling!" Acid honey boiled from the darkness. "Does darling have the teeniest inkling what happens to slaves who dawdle and keep mistress waiting? And odds bobs, hammer and tongs, you've still got your pants on!"
Languid accent forgotten, it was the pirate wench spitting blood.
"Now, hell rend thy mangy hide!"
"Sweet mistress," he protested, contrite but puzzled. "Nay, pardon me, but I came on this, and pondering it, fell into reverie, a disbelief and dismay, for I do not well understand."
"I'll dismay you, by thunder! What's that?"
From her tall, white form, dim seen on the bed, a naked arm shot into the moonlight, fingers snapping.
"Give it me! It's death, it's my calorie chart!"
I knew it. 'Tis guide whereby ladies do adjust their adipose tissues. "Ah, but why?" he sighed cunningly. "Why should my lovely mistress wish to put on weight?" It chopped her anger across the windpipe.
"Wish to put on... I, God of mercy, are you mad?"
"If I am, 'tis you have maddened me," he cried, suddenly fervid, and did a graceful kneel beside the bed. "Yet not so mad I can't tell delectable perfection a shape when I see it. I call me cheeky, but I say that to add 1 ounce to thy lissome lusciousness would be heresy. Ah, mistress, burn this trifle!" He twitched away the calorie chart. "Give up this mad idea of gaining half a stone. Let other dizzy dames go ballooning around. But please, please, stay sweetly slender as thou art." It would have convinced Tessie O'Shea she looked like Twiggy. With the moonlight on his profile and adoring eyes, it caused Mistress Anne's wrath to dissolve like an election pledge. Lissome, slender, delectable perfection, she fairly purred. "Why, thou saucy rabbit, judge my shape, will he? You're sure 'tis enough?" She suddenly sat upright in the moonlight, vibrating triumphantly, and Captain Avery gulped, gritted his teeth, and tried to think of cold, solemn things like church bells tolling, great big bells, frosty nights, then with pale full moon round glowing moons. Gad, even worse, got to get a grip. Swiftly he conjured up the wine-cup between them and spoke with an intensity that would have reduced the goddess Kali to molten toffee. "If a mere slave may offer to peerless beauty a token of humility and love, why then, get this down you." She took the cup, her green eyes sloppily moist.
"Darling, you shouldn't. A loving cup. Ah, sweet donation! Though you are a naughty rogue to have kept mistress waiting,"
she added playfully as she raised it to her lips, "and if you're not starkers by the time I've drunk this, God help you." And ere he could stir, she had gulped it and collared him lustfully, crying,
"Grappling hooks away!"
But even in that moment she went rigid, her eyes rolled, and with a stricken woof she fell back slowly, collapsing chimney-like from the base up, even as Vladimir had predicted. Before she hit the canvas, Avery was at the shutters, and the little pawnbroker was tumbling in like a drunk gibbon, croaking,
"How's she doing?"
"Stiffer than a plank." Avery was breathing hard, and not an instant too soon. "Right, Groon, do thou frisk the wardrobe and I the dressing-table." They searched swiftly, Avery silent, Vladimir muttering,
"God, the things they wear nowadays, disgusting!"
And within 10 minutes the floor was awash with shoes, dresses, frilly items, odd nylons, back copies of Tortuga Teen, bits of wire and pipe left in corners by workmen,
used galleon tickets, laundry bills, and a set of embroidered table mats intended as a wedding present for Blackbeard Teach and his seventh wife, touchingly labeled, "This time for keeps, eh, messmate? Lots of love, Anne and Jack." But with "Gone away, address not known," blue penciled on the outer wrapping. No Madagascar cross, though. Avery bit molded lip, and Vladimir swore.
"She can't have swallowed the bloody thing. Now where? What's amiss, Cap'n?"
"This is a beastly business," snapped Avery. "Going through her private effects like this, I don't know, it just seems sneaky. Even if she is a bit of a shocker, I mean," he indicated a scarlet silk corset edged with black lace, "for all we know, her mummy may have given her that."
"Oddly enough, you're probably right," said Vladimir, "but we can't afford sentiment. I mean, whose cross is it? And it's got to be here. She's bound to keep it by her."
"What's this?" Avery was examining a parchment which had fallen out of a fashion sea boot. "Ha, Groon, 'tis a chart, and new drawn, too. Nay, but of what? Why, 'tis of her bedchamber, this very room."
"Once a pirate, always a pirate," chuckled Vladimir. "What's this say, Captain?"
"No soundings marked, but latitude and longitude and all points plotted with rare skill." Avery glanced keenly round the great bedchamber in which the candles they had lighted made a bright pool, leaving the farthest corners in shadow. "Aye, bed, chest of drawers, vanitory unit and all, marked fair, and here, directions writ. Stand by, Groon, and take course as I read." He began, and Vladimir ploughed off obediently. "East, nor'east, 10 paces from ye window, then bear away due west, where ye bed abeam." "West, you idiot!" he rasped, as from dim recess came crash of falling china and a pawnbroker's anguished cry. "Bear up, man, or you'll be caught in stays."
"I am," whimpered Vladimir. "Them red and black uns of her mum's. You should have hung 'em up. Right, Cap'n?"
"Now, west again, close-hauled." Vladimir barked his shin and cursed in the gloom. "Lest ye bark your shins on the commode. And tacking southerly, go under... What means that? And so shall come hard by your goal. Groon, where are you, man?"
"Under the bed," came the muffled reply. "Bearing 10 degrees from the piss-pot, and hasn't been hoovered since the flood."
"Nay, 'tis impossible," muttered Avery, peering into the shadows, "unless it's under the floor."
"Or in a mattress above me."
Vladimir's head appeared from under the four-poster.
"That's it, Cap'n. Where else?"
Hot on the scent, they approached the bed, Avery averting his gaze from the stately nude slumbering rhythmically on the coverlet. Vladimir's eyes came out on stalks.
"God," he gulped, "she's real. Cap'n, you're a gent, or an idiot, I'm not sure which. Anyways, you'll have to lift her while I rummage."
So Avery gingerly lifted the buxom sleeper and tried to imagine he was up to his neck in an icy duck pond, while Vladimir hacked and burrowed and raised a blizzard of feathers, gasping stifled progress reports from inside the mattress. Thank goodness they'd soon be out of the clutches of this dreadful woman. Imagine really being owned by her! Avery shuddered and wished he hadn't, for it set up a harmonic motion in his voluptuous burden, and he nearly overbalanced. Not that she was as heavy as he'd imagined. Quite svelte, really, and probably a lot better than most slave owners, if it came to that. She'd been amiable enough when she wasn't being imperious, and awful, and she'd seemed to like him personally. Handsome woman, very like Mistress Gwyn, the actress, with that striking red hair. Nice perfume it had. Lilac? Honeysuckle? He bent his face to the Titian head cradled on his shoulder and inhaled. Orange blossom. Pretty, humorous mouth, too. What was it she tasted of again? Some fruit or other. Not orange, pineapple? Mango, of course. He liked mangoes. Really delicious taste.
"Got something in her eye, has she?" said a voice,
and in confusion Avery jerked his head up to find Vladimir eyeing him sardonically.
Blushing, the captain would have explained, but the words died on his lips as a little shyster raised a hand in which something glowed like a bottle of port, a gigantic ruby, its crimson rays shaming the gilt cross in which it was embedded.
"Number 3!"
exclaimed Vladimir triumphantly, but inwardly he was gloating.
"Number 6! Yippee! I told you we'd get lucky, didn't I? There it is. So now, if you finish trying to guess Lady Godiva's weight, let's away. We're all speed."
With guilty haste, Avery replaced the drugged tomato on the ruin of her bed and spread a coverlet over her, lest she take cold in the dawn chill. For some reason, it seemed the least he could do. He felt a strange reluctance to leave so abruptly furtive. Didn't seem polite, somehow. "Here, I say, Groon, we've made the most ghastly mess of her quarters," he frowned. "Oughtn't we to tidy a bit? I mean, what's she going to think when she wakes up?"
"Why don't we sit on the edge of her bed and wait to find out?" snarled Vladimir, one leg over the sill. "For God's sake, Captain, what the hell are servants for? Come on!"
But before Avery could reply, came a sound which froze him where he stood, while Vladimir gibbered and grabbed the shutter. Through the balmy tropic night came the crack of a shot, and then a rattle of musketry, and from far off the clang of a ship's bell and distant voices. Avery was at the window in a flash, and this is what he saw. Through a gap in the garden trees, the broad inlet between Roatan and Shark Island was clearly visible in the moonlight, and across the moon's bright wake on the water was gliding the black shape of a great ship, her spars stark against the pale night sky. Lights gleamed on her poop, and pinpricks of fire were at her rail. The crackle of reports followed, and now a longboat was pushing off from her towards shore. "A ship," Avery spoke without hesitation. "Who can she be?"
"Oh, the Mersey Ferry, beyond a doubt," cried Vladimir violently. "She's a bloody pirate, that's what she is. Quick, Captain, I got a boat beached. Let's scarp her."
But Avery's spirits had rocketed up past the 100 mark at this prospect of action. Shots, pirates, chaps in boats, this was more like it, and a sight better than grappling ardent redheads. Well, it was a change, anyway. "If pirate she be, good Groon," quoth he briskly, "then I must know more of her. Ye have the cross safe? Then haste away and wait for me. Shan't be more than a tick." He was off, a perfectly coordinated shadow gliding through the undergrowth, while Vladimir gnashed and implored and finally, for he was a realist, scuttled away to his boat. Nor, more shame to him, did he tarry. 6 crosses, no waiting, and you can keep the ruddy Caribbean, was how he saw it, and who knows how many salt sea miles 'twill be ere we have the pleasure of his company again. Meanwhile, Avery was high-stepping stealthily for the shore, aware that up ahead more shots were sounding and voices swearing, and borne on the night breeze was the sinister echo of rum-sodden music. For Vladimir's right, villainies afloat again, with hanky round beetling brows and cutlass and horny fist. And who is this who comes galumphing through the bushes, fleeing for dear life, blind with panic? Whoever it is, isn't going any place, for out of the shadows, like a jet-propelled Nemesis rocket's fly-half, Avery, Oxford U, Royal Navy, and Barbarians, to grass him with crunching tackle, and thereafter pin him to earth with steely whisper, "Who, sirrah? Whence? Whither? What's your hurry?" The stricken figure wheezed like a despairing air-cushion, subsided, and panted in despair.
"I wasn't trespassing, Your Honor, and strike me dumb if I even saw a rabbit, and wouldn't have touched it anyways, for aren't I a landed gentleman myself?"
"Holy God!" exclaimed Colonel Blood weakly. "It's you!"
"Blood? Here? But he ought to be miles away on the main with Lardo and Vanity and the rest of the Cohocoguzlin Conservation Society, surely?"
Plainly, some matter a great pitch and moment has occurred, and must be looked to instanter, along with other pressing matters, viz., if Vladimir has absconded, how is Avery going to get off Shark Island? What will Anne Bonny say when she wakes up and finds her room looking like Hurricane Susie? These two questions may be not unconnected. And what ship is that?
What a vanity, Sheba et al., and whither do we go hence? Let's ask blood, says you. Too late. Avery's way ahead of us.